Pseudopod number 4 for September 22nd, 2006. Today's story, Returning My Sister's Face by Yuji Foster. Good evening and welcome to Pseudopod, the bi-weekly horror podcast magazine. I'm your host, Myrna Lafferty, co-editor of Pseudopod, along with Ben Phillips. We strive to bring you the best in horror audio. Like our sister podcast, Escape Pod, we are a paying market supported by the donations of our listeners. You can visit our site to donate or simply to leave a comment at pseudopod.org. You can also email us at feedback@pseudopod.org. This week's story is a retelling of a Japanese folktale called Returning My Sister's Face by Yuji Foster. Ms. Foster is the managing editor and a fiction reviewer for Tangent and the assistant managing editor for The Town Drunk. Her fiction has received the 2002 Phobos Award and has been nominated for the British Fantasy, Southeastern Science Fiction, Parsec, and Pushcart Awards. She lives in a mildly haunted house in Atlanta, Georgia, that she shares with her husband and her pet skunk. The story is read for us by Stephen Ely, editor of Escape Pod. So pay homage to your ancestors, because I've got a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Returning My Sister's Face by Yuji Foster. My earliest memories are of Oiwa in the sunlight, brushing her magnificent hair. Unbound, it trailed to the floor, a waterfall of shimmering black, the same color as a raven's wing. It was Oiwa who picked me up from the dirt with words of comfort and wisdom when my pony threw me off for shouting in his ear. "Yasuo, do not cry, silly boy," she said as she dried my tears with the hem of her kimono. "And you should not rage at your pony either, but thank him for only tossing you from his back. If you had shouted in my ear like that, I would have bitten you besides." And it was Oiwa's proud smile I looked for when I won the praise of my swordmaster. I remember how small she looked, kneeling in her kimono with her hands folded in her lap. But she was always my big sister, even when I towered over her in my samurai armor. Our father died when I was a boy, felled by the sword of a barbarian from the west. He was a brave warlord. I barely remember him. Oiwa told me how he laughed when he swung me in his arms, proud of how fearless I was as a babe. With his death, our prosperity ended. Mother grew sick, and people turned away from us, loath to help those who had so obviously been touched by bad luck, as though it might be contagious. We would have become thieves or beggars if not for Shigekazu, the lord of Yotsuya. He took pity on us and took me in, gave me a swordsman's education, and let us stay in our ancestral home. To repay him, when I earned my warrior's katana, I became his most loyal captain. I patrolled his borders and kept bandits from abusing his farmers and tradesmen. It was the start of plum blossom season during my 17th year when Iemon arrived. The white and fuchsia petals shed their heavy perfume, and there was anticipation of the upcoming Ume Matsuri festival. Iemon rode to Lord Shigekazu's gate, a masterless samurai, shining in his fine Michiyuki overcoat, astride a golden stallion. He brought with him his katana and his servant, Kohei, and nothing else. He went to Shigekazu and petitioned to be allowed to join his guard. In turn, my lord Shigekazu asked me to look after him. It was strange for me, as Iemon was a well-grown man, 10 years my senior. Yet I was in the teacher's position. Even so, Iemon was gracious. He did not chafe when I instructed him as to how we set our watches and shifts, nor did he sneer to spar at bamboo canes with me. Indeed, he laughed when I bested him in our first bout, and was as genial in triumph in our second. He had no kin in the area and no hearth, so I invited him to dinner. Oiwa was surprised to see 3 men, Iemon, Kohei, and myself, walking up the path, but she was sweetly courteous, as I knew she would be. She ran to put more water on for tea, and returned with a basin of scented water for us to splash upon our hands and faces. If I try, I can still remember the flavors from that dinner. Hot soup with tangy seaweed, sticky rice that melted on my tongue, tart umeboshi from the plum trees, and sweet bean cakes that could have been clouds of nectar fallen from the heavens. After the meal, Kohei washed the pots and bowls, while Oiwa went to tend our mother. Iemon and I sat on tatami mats and smoked pipes, awash in tranquil harmony. With the blue smoke wreathing his face, Iemon cast his eyes down.
"Tell me, Yasuo," he said, "why is your beautiful sister without a husband?"
I was surprised at how forthright he was on this matter of delicacy, but then he was new to Yotsuya and did not know our family's history.
"None will take her," I said,
"for though Oiwa is noble, she can bring no dowry to a marriage. Our father died with his riches plundered. What household wealth we had we spent on medicine and doctors for our mother, who languishes with a wasting disease."
"But you have this fine house in the country."
"We owe all to Lord Shigekazu. Without his mercy and generosity, we would be penniless, cast out into the streets."
"Still, your sister is sweet of face and graceful of temperament. Surely there are men who would take her to wife?"
"She is considered a bad luck woman," I admitted. "She has no suitors."
"Outrageous!" Iemon declared.
Of course, I was not going to disagree. When Oiwa came from my mother's room, Iemon rose to his feet and bowed low to her. A soft blush, like the new glow of camellia blossoms on a white bough, filled her face, and she hid behind her fan.
"Lady Oiwa," Iemon said, "I would be honored if you would walk with me at the Ume Matsuri Festival. May I call upon you tomorrow?"
My sister's blush deepened, turning the enchanting hue of sunset clouds at midsummer. "I will look forward to it." The Ume Matsuri Festival was the traditional start of spring. The plum trees displayed their five-petaled blooms during the month of Yayoi, while beneath them maidens and youths strolled together. The maidens wore kimonos to rival the flowers, violet silk embroidered with golden bamboo shoots, apricot sleeves with scarlet chrysanthemum, seafoam brocade with glowing koi painted on them. And the young men wore the maidens like banners upon their arms. Oiwa did not have much finery, as we had sold her most lavish kimonos long ago. But she had kept one kimono, our great-great-grandmother's good luck silk. It was peacock blue brocade with silver pine trees and malachite maple leaves woven through the cloth. With her hair piled high on her head and wooden geta sandals on her feet, Oiwa looked like a princess. Iemon's eyes widened when he saw her. He bore with him a perfect white plum blossom for her hair, and she let him affix it in her gleaming locks. They walked arm in arm together among the plum trees. Iemon became a frequent caller, and as the first cherry blossoms began to bud, they announced their Yui no betrothal. Since there was but meager wealth on both sides, the gifts they exchanged were, of necessity, modest. Iemon gave my sister a white obi to use as a belt on her wedding kimono. It was fine silk, embroidered with snow-white phoenixes. In return, Oiwa gave her husband-to-be a black hakama she had sewn with her own hands, every stitch a prayer of loyalty and fidelity. At the wedding ceremony, Oiwa was radiant as the dawn star as she glided through the humble Shinto shrine of our ancestors. We had hired a maid from town to dress her hair with rented kanzashi combs and to help her don the traditional shiromaku kimono. Iemon was composed, an expression of serenity on his face as he spoke the commitment vows. He looked like a king in his newly made hakama robe. Oiwa's hand was steady, without a whisper of tremor, when she lit the customary lamps. But barely had the taste of the wedding sake faded when trouble visited. Our mother, too weak even to attend the ceremony, worsened. We thought death was ready to harvest her, yet she clung with grim tenacity to this world. The newlywed's month of sweetness was cut short, barely begun. Then Lord Shigekazu received word that Lady Uma, his granddaughter, would be traveling from the city of Edo to visit him on her quest to find a husband. As he had not seen the daughter of his daughter in many years, he was jubilant at the news. He asked me to take a regiment of men to meet her at his border. For the first time, I was loath to do his bidding. "Please, Lord Shigekazu," I said, "my mother is very ill. I would prefer to stay near. Will you give me leave to decline this obligation?"
"Obligation?" Lord Shigekazu demanded. "Is it not basic courtesy that the captain I have raised as a grandson should feel honor-bound to protect the safety of my only granddaughter? What if there are bandits on the road? Come, Yasuo, your mother has had many a bad turn. Surely she will last a fortnight longer."
"Please, my lord, it is my least desire to defy you, but I also owe duty to she who bore me." Lord Shigekazu might have said harsher words then, ones that would have made me lose face if I did not bow to his wishes, but Iemon intervened.
"If my lord would be willing to indulge one so new to his service," he said, "I would be greatly privileged if I could take my brother's place as escort for the Lady Uma."
Lord Shigekazu's brow still creased with darkness, but he allowed the substitution, as Iemon was now my kin, and to refuse him would disgrace both of us. And so the next morning, Iemon took his golden stallion and a regiment of my most trusted men to the Yotsuya borders. There was a great storm that night. Rain clattered against the wooden shutters, and the fierce wind tipped and twirled the lanterns so their light cast stark shadows and dancing silhouettes. Oiwa and I kneeled by our mother's tatami mat, holding her hand and taking turns fanning her brow. She complained of a burning thirst, but her throat was too ragged to swallow the weak tea Oiwa brewed. Mother's mind flitted like a bird between this world and the next. She rarely knew us, babbling instead as though we were spirits and ancestors long dead. I knew she would leave us soon. They say if someone sees their ancestors in a fever dream, it is not long before they will go to join them. Oiwa continued to fight against the inexorable.
"Mama," she whispered, "Mama, try to drink a little of this green tea. It will cool you."
Mother sat bolt upright and stared at Oiwa.
"Where is your face?" she cried.
Oiwa reached a hand to her cheek.
It is at the front of my head, where it always is."
"No, only half of it," Mother replied.
She glared at me.
"I pledge you to return the other half of your sister's face. Swear it, Yasuo."
Oiwa and I exchanged troubled looks. I do not swear oaths lightly, so I hesitated to promise to some fantasy of fever, but our mother was insistent.
"Swear it, or I will haunt you after I die! Swear!"
Oiwa leaned to me.
"There is no harm in giving your word to something that requires no deed. Do not let her final words be a curse."
So I bowed my head over our mother's hand and promised to return Oiwa's missing half-face. I was uneasy, but truthfully, what harm was there in such a promise? The next thunderbolt brought a sudden gale into the room, crashing open the shutter and blowing out the oil lamp. When we had relit it, our mother was gone, extinguished with the lamp, and unlike it, forever dark. My sister's ragged sobs filled the room as she clutched our mother's body to her breast. I bowed my head. Lord Shigekazu's anger with me was somewhat assuaged by the news of Mother's death. Still, I knew he harbored resentment. After her cremation ceremony, he insisted I return to the soldiers' barracks. Though Oiwa was pale and weak with grief, she urged me to go.
"We must not lose Shigekazu's favor," she said. "We owe him a debt we will never be able to repay."
I knew in a mere fortnight Iemon would return, so I packed my saddlebags and kissed her farewell. I dined at home when I could escape for an evening, so Oiwa would not be alone. She was always glad to see me, but grief haunted her eyes, and where once her cheeks were blushing peaches, they had begun to sink and grow sallow. I saw a strand of white in her lustrous hair, and it saddened me. Oiwa had spent her youth tending our mother. Now her joy had flown with mother's death. I prayed that Iemon's devoted attentions would be able to restore her joy, if not her youth. As though in answer to my prayers, the gods delivered Iemon at last. And like a sunrise, with him came the Lady Uma. Having spent time in the royal courts, she was like a jeweled butterfly among moths. She wore layers of fine silk kimonos, 12 of them together, with the sleeve cuffs and collars cut to display each distinctive color: lilac, damson, azure, indigo, emerald, topaz, citrine, garnet, peach, scarlet, magenta, and finally, at the last, creamy white, and each one embroidered with a different design and gold thread. It seemed all the unmarried men in Yotsuya found themselves captivated by the flashing hems of Lady Uma's kimonos and the elusive perfume she wore, jasmine and crushed lily. I, along with half my men, wrote sonnets of love and admiration to her. But then, more misfortune. Word came of raiders from the west, great men with shaggy faces and beastly apparel, plundering the countryside. I was assigned the duty of quashing their incursion before it became an invasion. It was with a mournful heart that I left Lady Uma's presence, but I did not dare to protest. I was already low man. The barbarians were vicious and tenacious. They had set up a rude fortification on the edge of Yotsuya. I knew if I did not disperse them, they would foray deeper in, burning villages and raising fertile farmlands. I organized my men for a siege. The month of rice planting, Utsuki, passed. Then the month of rice sprouting, Satsuki. Summer lapsed in a blur of sun and waiting. My soldiers took turns fishing the waters and hunting the forest for our meals. We cooked upwind of the barbarians to torment them with a smell of fresh fish and sweet rice, while they were reduced to hard loaves and dry meat. It was my turn with net and rod. The water laved cool around my knees, and I grew lost in thoughts of the perfection of Lady Uma's face with its dusting of rice powder. A great tug on my line nearly pulled me over. I called my men to help bring in the grandfather fish. We soon saw it was not a fish tangled in my line. It was a most terrible article I had caught. Two bodies, nailed to either side of a black door, the prescribed punishment for convicted adulterers. They were purple and bloated. Her face in particular was most terrible to look upon. Half of it seemed to have melted away as though it were wax beside a fire. I swept away the debris of river weed from the grisly plank. The woman was wrapped in a peacock blue kimono, the silk ruined by the water. I could make out the memory of silver pine trees and dark green maple leaves outlined on the brocade. It was Oiwa's festival kimono. Oh, my sister! And sharing her door of disgrace was Iemon's servant, Kohei. I recognized his face and the yukata robe he wore. I do not know what I screamed then, a curse on my sister, or on the gods, or on myself. I bolted from that place, flung myself upon my stallion, and galloped away. I rode through rain and sun and night until my steed collapsed beneath me. Then I ran. When my armor and helmet weighed me down, I tossed them aside. I kept only the clothes on my back and my katana, for I would need it to spill the cursed blood from my veins at the altar of my ancestors. It was night when I stumbled through the gardens of my ancestral home and up the steps of our shrine. I ignited 4 sticks of incense and lit 4 candles, the number for death and misfortune. Around me, the icons of the most revered ancestors of my lineage, dukes and warlords and virtuous ladies, watched as I removed my soiled and tattered shirt. I felt their eyes as I knelt and drew my katana.
Yasuo, do not cry, silly boy.
Oiwa stood in the shadow of a bamboo screen, holding a fan over her face. I leaped to my feet, ready to embrace her. But when she came closer, I saw by the light of the 4 candles that Oiwa had no legs. Where in the darkness I had thought them concealed by night, in the circle of candle shine, I saw she trailed away to a wisp of translucence.
Oiwa, I whispered, what has befallen you? Remember the oath you made to our mother?
Yes.
I call upon you to honor it.
She dropped her fan. What had been dreadful on her poor body, on her visage as a yurei, an angry ghost, was even more terrible. One side of her face was sweet and whole, the other melted away. One eye rolled in its socket, yellow and diseased. A crust of tears tracked from it down her sagging cheek. Her once opulent hair was lank and thin, dirty strands hanging from her torn scalp. Half her mouth was curled down, black and putrid, a wad of spittle hovering at the edge. And the skin on that cheek and that side of her brow was gray and curdled. I shrieked in terror, and there was only blackness. I woke in the shrine. The 4 candles burned away, and the cloying scent of incense hovering in a cloud. Iemon supported me, dragged me to my feet.
I thought the voices in the garden were cats fighting or the shriek of nightbirds, he said. If I had known you had returned, my brother, I would have run to your side.
I was fishing, I mumbled, on the edge of delirium. There was a door. Oiwa and Kohei. I remembered terrible images of Oiwa, her face dripping and her blackened mouth. But no, that was not how I saw her on the door, surely.
That is not how I would have had you learn of it. Come inside, I will tell the sorry tale.
Within, Iemon poured me a bowl of plum wine, which I drank in 2 gulps. He poured another that I clutched in trembling fingers.
It was my fault, Iemon said. If I had not volunteered to escort Lady Uma to her grandfather's house, perhaps Oiwa would not have gone mad with loneliness.
What are you saying?
I found them together. Oiwa drank poison, some mixture of the garden. Suicide. I treated Kohei to the blade of my katana.
My sister was an honorable woman.
I would not have revealed their sin, truly, but—
Liar!
I shrieked. Get out of my house!
His face, so beseeching a moment before, hardened.
This is now my house. Your mother bequeathed it to Oiwa, and as her husband, I am her beneficiary.
The half-full bowl of wine shattered on the floor.
You are throwing me out?
Immediately, he was the picture of solicitude.
No, no, never. I do not blame you for your sister's wantonness, but you must face the truth.
I sank to my knees, sobbing like a child, calling to Oiwa. Iemon left me alone to preserve what little honor I could still lay claim to. In the subsequent days, I refused to leave the house, and Iemon let me brood and weep as I would. He also left me casks of plum wine and bags of opium to ease my grief. Welcoming the blunting of memory, I drank and smoked my days away. It was during one of these opium-muddled twilights that Oiwa returned. The peacock blue silk of her kimono was stained by river water, but she protected me from the worst of her terrible appearance. She held a paper fan across the sinister half of her face.
"My face is still half missing," she said.
I scrambled away, cowering in a corner of the room.
"What face do you want to recover?" I whimpered. "Your honor or your beauty?"
"Ah, little brother, you have come to the crux of it. Know this, while you have sunk yourself in wine and opium, the nuptial plans rush forward. I will return on our wedding night. Look for me then. See to it my face is restored that night, or I will haunt you forever."
"Oiwa, I am so sorry."
Her voice softened.
"Do not cry, little brother. I have shed enough tears for us both."
Then she was gone, and all the opium cobwebs swept from my mind with her. It was dark, the sun long fled beneath the horizon. I crept from my chambers, disheveled and bleary. Voices drifted from the sitting room, two men at dinner. I clung to the shadows and listened.
"It was a fortuitous day when you came to Yotsuya."
It was Lord Shigekazu.
"I am honored that you say it, my lord," Iemon replied. "Come now, surely you can call me grandfather."
"I would not wish for unseemly haste."
"Ah, your Yuino to my granddaughter can be announced soon enough. It is well you discovered your wife, that slattern's betrayal, and dealt with her and her servants so decisively. Otherwise, the smear on your reputation—"
I did not breathe while I struggled to make sense of their words. Shigekazu was Iemon's grandfather? Iemon engaged to Lady Uma? It was the first revelation. The second came after their words penetrated further. Shigekazu had said, "dealt with her," meaning Oiwa. Iemon had told me my sister had taken poison, dishonorable suicide. But now it seemed more likely that Iemon had dispatched her himself. A lie. It is well known that falsehoods come in threes. This was the second lie, the first being that Oiwa had been unfaithful. But the third lie I did not yet know. I slunk back to my chambers. While I poured the last of the wine onto the thirsty rocks outside, for I did not wish to be tempted by the seduction of euphoric forgetfulness, I mused over the question. I was about to scatter the opium to the winds when I paused. I put on fresh clothing, a short Hayori jacket and Hakama pants, as befitting a lowly servant. Stealing Iemon's golden stallion from the stable, I rode to Lord Shigekazu's pavilion. There, I slipped through the watch corridors and guard niches I knew so well from my time as Shigekazu's captain, until I came to Lady Uma's chambers. By the light of a muted lamp, I set a porcelain plate by her head and set fire to the opium until a deep, sweet smoke filled the room. In order to keep my own head clear, I wrapped my face with a silk sleeve of one of Uma's kimonos. It also muffled my mouth and thereby my voice, which further served my purposes. When I was sure she was deep in the opium's thrall, I spoke.
"Uma, Uma,"
I intoned.
"This is your ancestral kami,
your family's spirit of fertility. If you wish to bear sons, you must honor me.
Uma mumbled and stirred.
Speak up, Uma. I cannot hear you,
I sang.
What do you want?
Her speech was sluggish.
Let me sleep.
If you wish for your union to Iemon to be blessed with sons, you must answer my questions so I can cast your horoscope.
This seemed to pique her interest.
How many sons will I have? She murmured.
As many sons as the fortnights of your courtship.
That is good. We will have many sons.
Was your courtship so long?
She laughed, her throat sultry.
He courted me as soon as he saw me on my palfrey, on the very border of Yatsuya.
As your escort?
Even then.
Was he not married?
I suppose so, but it is common knowledge in the Emperor's court that wives are but a passing inconvenience.
Such a place of depravity the Emperor's house must be.
Did you plot with Iemon to loosen this inconvenience?
A noblewoman does not dirty herself with such details. But when his wife and his servant were found forming the double-backed demon, well, I was hardly surprised.
It was enough. I had discovered the third lie. It was Uma herself. Where Oiwa had been pure and innocent, Uma was corrupt and evil. My fingers trembled to wrap around her traitorous throat. I loomed over her, but I felt an icy touch at my shoulder. I glanced back, almost upsetting the lamp when I saw Oiwa's Yurei. Thankfully, she continued to shield her face with her fan, though her single clear eye was baleful.
In order to bear sons,
she said, in imitation of my Kami voice,
you must marry Iemon tomorrow.
We have only just announced our intention to marry to Grandfather today.
Regardless, you must marry tomorrow, or you will be barren forever.
I stared at Oiwa. What was she about?
Do you understand me, Uma?
She demanded.
You must marry tomorrow!
I will, Kami. I will.
Do not forget.
This last she directed at me. But Uma, with her eyes shut, did not notice the difference. Oiwa's fan fluttered, an unspoken threat, and she dissolved into the night. Trembling like a wind-racked pine tree, I smothered the still smoldering opium and blew it cool before pouring ashes and plate into the pocket of my haori jacket. I made sure to light incense to mask the scent as I skulked out of Uma's room. Making as much haste as I dared, I darted to where I had stashed Iemon's stallion, and rode him full out all the way back. I had him restabled, my clean clothes shucked, and the ashes of the opium smeared in my hair, while Iemon and Shigekazu lingered over sake. After Shigekazu returned to his pavilion, Iemon came to my quarters with a jar of wine, which I dutifully drank. The next morning, Iemon trotted me out. A man from the town came to shave and dress us. Through this purification, Iemon continued to ply me with wine. I drank enough to keep my hand steady and my resolve strong, but poured two bowls out for every one I drank. Iemon dressed in the black hakama Oiwa had given him, a travesty of my sister's devotion.
"Why the finery?"
I asked, speaking the words as though through half-numbed lips.
"I am to become engaged to the Lady Uma," Iemon replied. "As you are my brother, I think you should know before the public announcement. I would prefer to stay single, for my heart lies with Oiwa yet, but Lord Shigekazu insisted. He thought good fortune could be restored to his house by a prosperous match."
The lies tripped so easily off his tongue.
"I don't begrudge you happiness, my brother."
I giggled like a courtesan, high-pitched and merry, and pretended not to see the look of disgust on my brother's face. When the guests arrived, I played the drunkard for them all, spilling tea and sake and tripping over my own feet. Shigekazu, especially, was revolted by me. After I groped one of Uma's maidens, he grabbed me and dragged me from the house. It was what I had hoped he would do. Dropping my dissembling act, I bowed low.
"My lord, I hope you'll forgive my display. I needed to speak to you in private."
He was surprised at my sudden lucid speech, but he was not inclined to hear me. He twisted away.
"Wait, My ancestors have warned me. They have given me two things to share with you. If you recognize the signs, will you humor me?"
He turned back, suspicion and distaste marking lines in his brow. I handed him the plate from his granddaughter's room.
"Why, this is the expensive plate I gave Uma when she arrived. How did you—"
"Lady Uma will insist that the wedding be held today," I said. "She will not be swayed. This, too, my ancestors divulged. Will you hear me?"
"If Uma insists on marrying Iemon today, which I know she will not, then yes, I will."
How Shigekazu's eyes bulged when Uma announced she wished to go to the temple that very day to wed Iemon. No words could change her mind, and so their Yuino engagement became their wedding party. And that is how I pressed Lord Shigekazu into accompanying me in hiding behind a bamboo screen in their wedding chambers. His patience with me was at its limits, though. It was the height of impropriety for us to be there, but when the bride in her Tsuno Kakushi veil stepped into the room, her face concealed, he was as silent as I could have wished. Behind her, Iemon followed, and together they lit the ceremonial lamps.
"Why such haste, Blossom?" Iemon said. "It goes against the plan we made and looks improper."
"Do you not burn for me after all, my husband?"
Through the veil, Uma's voice was muffled and strange. My blood turned chill and slow. It was not Uma's voice at all. I had heard that cadence, that tone, every day as a boy, singing and talking and shouting. I would know it in my sleep. It was Oiwa. My plan had been to force a confession from Iemon and Uma at Blade Point, witnessed by Shigekazu. My sister's Yurei had other intentions. Iemon wrapped his arms around his bride.
"How could you ask such a thing?"
"I just wonder if you truly wish to marry me. Were your words of promise lies? Did you instead plan to stay with your wife, Oiwa?"
"Oiwa? That bad luck slut?"
Iemon stepped back.
"How could you think that?"
"Perhaps you did not intend for Oiwa to betray you and were put out by it?"
He caught one of her lily hands.
"Come, if it will make you believe my love for you, I will tell you the truth of Oiwa's fate. Oiwa did not betray me. She was utterly devoted to me, the simpering cow. You were jealous of her face, you said. She was so sickly after the death of her mother. It was easy to pour poison into the tea. I did it while she watched, calling it medicine. She took it from my hands with such trust. Didn't you hear how the poison I chose disfigured her? Would I have delivered such a caustic potion to anyone I loved?"
"Tell me the symptoms of the poison."
Her voice turned harsh. Could Iemon not hear it?
"It made her ugly, for your enjoyment, my love. It made her hair fall out in great clumps."
The figure of Uma reached under the Tsuno Kakushi and shed a handful of long black hair with dried blood at their roots.
"What else?"
"Uma, what?"
"What else?"
Her face. One eye grew swollen and infected, weeping pus and tears, while the skin puckered, rotting from within.
"She must have been in great pain."
"She screamed for hours."
Lord Shigekazu looked like the gods themselves had touched him, and they had used a heavy hand.
"It must have felt like a lifetime of suffering," the bride continued.
"Better her lifetime than mine. Come, let us lie together, my beautiful Blossom."
He lifted his hands to the Tsuno Kakushi. The thin white silk slid to the floor. Beneath it, as I had known, was not Uma's pretty face, but Oiwa's terrible one. The white rice powder did not conceal the crust of seeping yellow that oozed from her eye, nor did it cover the bleak decay of her skin as it sloughed off.
"Come, my husband, kiss me!"
Oiwa held her hands out to Iemon.
"Embrace me!"
Iemon shrieked and pulled his katana from its sheath. With a single slice, he swept the head off her shoulders. It rolled to where Shigekazu and I spied from behind the bamboo screen. But it was not Oiwa's face on that severed head. It was Uma's. Shigekazu and I scrambled from cover, away from the grisly remains. Iemon screamed when he saw us, a cry of rage and madness. He charged at us with his katana upraised. I freed my blade, parried aside his wild strike, and Shigekazu tangled his legs from behind. I knocked his katana from his hand, and together Shigekazu and I bound him. He gibbered all the while, raving that he saw Oiwa's face in the lantern, her yurei in the corner, her shadow behind the bamboo screen. When I glanced at these places, all I saw were lantern, corner, and screen. Shigekazu sent for the magistrate and told him the whole story, clearing Oiwa of any sin. The magistrate sentenced Iemon to death for his crimes. In the days before his execution, Iemon continued to screech and wail in his tiny cell, mad with terror. His eyes rolled in his head, following unseen specters, unknown horrors, all with Oiwa's face. In the end, the headsman's sword was a mercy. That night, I prayed before the altar of my ancestors. Oiwa, my part in restoring your honor is done. Are you pleased? There was no sound but the wind. I did not see her again that night, or any other, although I have heard stories in the village of a beautiful maiden wearing a peacock-blue kimono, walking among the plum trees, singing. They say her face is exquisite, but her song sad.
Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. This means that you can scare as many friends as you like with it, just don't change it and don't sell it to them. Our music is by permission of Anders Manga at andersmanga.com. Next time, we bring you a story by Michael Stone about a loyal manservant and amateur magician. Until then, remember that food testers aren't that expensive these days, no matter how much you trust your spouse.